Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Kristi Noem raised almost $1 million in the fourth quarter of 2020 for her campaign. Roughly 80% of that was from donors outside of South Dakota. It was the height of the pandemic here at home when hundreds of people were dying weekly and hospitals were pushed to their capacity. Noem is painted as a villain by the media, so says the Ingram Angle on Fox News. We've got the latest from the South Dakota legislature on the Ocheche-Shakowin schools bill, and fresh acts of racism scar the welcome to the Pine Ridge Reservation as vandals paint a swastika on the tribe's roadside signs. Our Dakota political junkies join us to visit about these topics. Pam Caravu is a professor of political science at Black Hills State University. Professor Caravu, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Kevin Killer is president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and a former South Dakota lawmaker. President Killer, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to hear your voice.
I want to start with these signs of racism from vandalism of a sign with, we can't say on the radio everything that was painted on the sign, but we'll just say anti-Biden rhetoric and the letters KKK, a swastika. Also saw language spray painted in the art alley in Rapid City, and a woman in Rapid City who was kicked out of a bar for referring to other women with racial insults as well. So there was a lot that kind of happened all at once. And President Killer, I want to start with you. Tell me a little bit about those signs and when they were discovered. And how do you sort of process the overt nature of that kind of gesture?
Sure. Thank you for bringing this topic up. And, I appreciate the discussion on this. I think the signs, we were first alerted to them, I believe it was either Friday nights or Saturday morning. And when that came out, it was just seeing the reaction from our community that, they wanted some kind of the statement done, just basically acknowledging that, but also, just like a reality. And it's a sad reality of where we're at in the, 21st century of even having to be able to deal with this. And, as we kind of sit here and talk about this, I just really would encourage the listeners to, go out and visit their reservations if they're close to them, or if they're, out of state listeners or all that, just go visit the communities when it's safe and when they're open, to just, again, build good relations. Cause one of the things since I was last on here, it was before I was president, but one of the things that I ran as is being a good relative, and that's a concept that, we hold near and dear to our hearts as Lakotas and as Oglalas, is that we want to make sure that we always have a good relationship with, wherever we go, whoever we meet, and leave that good impression on people. And, these things are a statement, and I think it is leading to hopefully a healthy conversation on where we're at in the, 21st century post presidency of the previous president and in the incoming president, and also, just reaching out to just different leaders within our tribe, all this kind of stuff. And, I had a chance to visit with the, just different law enforcement, and they're aware of it, and I think it's just really taking this as a learning opportunity of that. I've been visiting with artists and all that, and how can we build something up to really welcome our community, welcome our members, and just really show that, some of these things, while they're petty and hateful in nature, that they don't define us, and they don't, we are going to move past this. And it's just, it's something we just build our resiliency, so.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that it happened, and I hope that the people who took those actions are found and brought to an appropriate, justice, whatever that would be for the vandalism. And Pam Caravu, I've been here for 5 years at SDPB, and it seems like this certainly is not the first time that we've had to talk about or a story like this of some kind of vandalism, racism, actions that people need to unpack. And this is a constant conversation in many ways. What do you want to add to that?
I was sitting here thinking about how we can, and we have got to get back to the place where people are ashamed to behave this way. The power of shame, I think, which sounds very old-fashioned, but I think we've seen a decline in, an increase in the feeling that it's okay to express these ideas and to hold these ideas in the last 4 years. And I look forward to getting to a place where people don't feel free to do so. Not that I think, repressed or hidden racism is appropriate or good for society either, but it shouldn't be okay to behave this way. On the other hand, I've also been thinking a little bit about how sometimes our calls for civility can be used to actually keep people of color in their place. And we demand civility from people who are expressing outrage on their treatment, and then we allow other people to break those rules without consequence. So it's a complicated issue. I certainly look forward to more sophisticated and elevated discussions with this new presidential administration.
And I'm thinking of, and Dr. Karavahue, you might want to comment on this, just the role of people around, adjacent to, people in a bar or restaurant, the workers in Rapid City who go down and repaint the vandalism, and the conversations that we all need to be having when these things happen, and the role of bystanders to stand up and say, it's a swastika. It's not okay. I mean, this is seems like kind of a no-brainer, doesn't it? But what do you think the role is of every South Dakota citizen?
It's interesting. That's an interesting idea because, one of the things that I learned about when I moved to South Dakota was South Dakota nice. People mind their own business. They generally don't cause a fuss. And I think that's, maybe this is the downside of South Dakota nice. When you see someone behaving badly in public, you tend to, you may judge them, you may look at them and say, no, I don't agree, or whatever, but you don't actually say anything, you don't speak out. Whereas in other parts of the country, if you're behaving badly, the people around you are perfectly willing to point out that they're behaving like a fool. So maybe we need to get a little over ourselves as far as our South Dakota nice and our Midwest nice and be willing to stand up and say, no, get out. I don't want to be around here if you're going to behave this way. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to argue against South Dakota nice sometimes, though.
Right. But it's okay to call racism racism.
Oh, yes. And how do we do that in a way that's safe for the bystander, too?
Right. Interesting. Kevin Killer, you want to add anything to that notion of the responsibility and the role and what's helpful and what's not helpful for people who are bystanders or who might know who these people were, for example, and perhaps weren't sure they should say anything?
Sure. It's just incumbent on the communities because, again, going back to that concept of being a good relative is that, it's always, that's one of the things I do appreciate about South Dakota is that it's a place where, you have good neighbors, it's the same concept as good relative and just being able to, just really, call people out, when you need to, and people might refer to it as cancel culture or whatever, but really at the end of the day, it's just making sure people are safe around you in all forms, and understanding that people are comfortable and people are okay to have a conversation because it shouldn't. And that was one of the things that, one of my mentors, his name's Albert Hale, and he was like one of the unique roles of being a tribal chairman and also a state senator, and he served in Arizona. But that's one of the things that he mentioned. He just recently passed, so rest in peace to him of COVID. But, he was from Arizona, and that's one of the things he always said is that, we as a Native community know more about non-Native communities versus non-Native communities knowing more about us. And I think it's just a wake-up call just to sit there and say, okay, well, how can we really reach out and learn more from each other. And why is it important to have sovereignty? Why are treaties important? Why is, why are reservations here? All this kind of stuff. And again, you know, just harkening back to my experience in the legislature, I know that there was legislators who'd never been to a reservation. So again, you know, that's what I said for all the listeners in the audience, you know, just take time to go visit, you know, a reservation and just go learn about your relatives, your neighbors, you know, all this, and learn the history and all that. Because, you know, I think that's one of the things that's being brought up is just the history of our communities and where they're at. And, you know, just that whole story of you know, who we are as a region, who we are as a state, and who we are as a local community.
To that end, let's transition and bring in this conversation of the Otetchi-Shakouin essential understandings and the potential for schools that focus on that and the debate that's been going on in the state legislature. And President Killer, you've been a lawmaker before, and you, I'm sure, watched closely sort of some of the procedural wranglings around this legislation. What can you tell us about what is being attempted here with some of this legislation regarding Otetchi-Shakouin essential understandings and school?
Sure. I think it's Senate Bill 68, and it's being brought forward by Senator Chorheiner and I think Representative Puri Puyer on the House side. And it was passed out of the State Tribal Relations Committee, I believe, with unanimous support. And it came last year and it passed the Senate on a unanimous vote. And this year the initial draft passed out of committee 6-1. And then when it got to the Senate floor, it failed on a 14-20 vote, and it was reconsidered. And what that means for the listeners is that, you know, when it's reconsidered in the legislature, there's some changes to the bill, some language or something like that, that, you know, people are agreeable to, where if a bill fails the first time, it can be reconsidered. And that vote was 18-16. So barely, again, you know, as barely one vote. But it is good to have that discussion. And the bill itself is actually is going to kind of help change the conversation around how schools are measured, how schools look at education, you know, through the public system. And just you know, seeing what we can do for positive. Because I think that's one of the things that when I was in the legislature, is seeing, this much needed change in our education systems, because, you know, we have an extraordinary dropout rate for a lot of our native communities. And it's like, well, we need to really think, examine, how do we change that? How do we correct that? And, you know, and I also want to, you know, just put it out there that, you know, I was an initial supporter of the WAYE Act in 2008, because, you know, I looked at, you know, that we should never deny an opportunity for any young person, you know, I don't care if they're native or non-native, whatever, to better themselves and better their lives and give them, you know, different options. You know, and I think that's one of the things that the premise and the understanding of a lot of the advocates is they come from that same belief. So,
yeah, Dr. Caribou, the state legislature is often accused of bringing bills that address, provide solutions for problems that don't exist. The problem of the gap between Native and non-Native students' graduation rate is certainly a problem. When Ben Jones was Secretary of Education, one of his goals was to address that gap, and that was right before the pandemic, and some committees were gathered that had to sort of, you know, put on pause for a minute. Now we have a new Secretary of Education. We heard from Lori Simon, who testified against this bill. Tell us your insight into just this whole conversation about making a change, and why has this bill been controversial to your mind?
From what I'm reading, it sounds as though there are pro-public school organizations that are concerned about the funding for this bill. And so specifically the School Administrators of South Dakota, which is an interest group made up of South Dakota administrators, spoke against the bill because they're concerned that the bill, as it was debated, could drain funds from school districts, and given the low levels of public education support or funding in South Dakota, I can understand that concern. And also, I heard arguments that they were worried that this bill would open the door to charter school legislation in South Dakota. But I was taking a look at the amendment offered by Senator Heinert, and it actually just makes a small change that seems to give local school districts a little more autonomy as to whether to authorize these schools under Senate Bill 68. And I'm wondering whether that small change, changing the word shall to may, rather, so which implies that they would have a little more choice, a little more discretion, if that will alleviate their concerns, that there will be more public, supervision of the schools, that we're not opening the door to charter schools and we're not adversely affecting public funding for public schools in South Dakota.
Yeah, I heard Sarah Pierce, who's been on this program before, testifying in front of the committee and also saying very strongly, if this isn't the solution, please tell me what solution you bring to the table, because this is a problem that needs to be addressed right now. I want to transition a little bit as well to and of course, here on SDPB, we're covering Senate Bill 68 in an ongoing way, and we'll bring you updates as they come out. I want to talk a little bit about Governor Kristi Noem, because she was on the Ingram angle on Fox News. It was posted online today, and Laura Ingram was saying that the media, the mainstream media, in her words, is just really out to get Governor Noem. We're going to play a clip of that back and forth. Take a listen.
They are so annoyed by you. Why is that? And why do you have a target on your back when it comes to the American media?
You know, Laura, I really think it's about control. They have used for the last year fear to control people. And in South Dakota, we just took a very different path. We knew the science told us we couldn't stop the virus. We could slow it down and protect people who might be vulnerable and make sure we had enough hospital capacity to take care of those who would need it, but that we were going to do it together and allow people to be flexible to take care of their families and still put food on the table. So, you know, that was a unique approach that for our people really worked well. We did have tragedies and we did have losses, but we also got through it better than virtually every other state. And I think the media hates that, because it really is a testimony to what Republicans believe in, what conservatives believe in. We implemented what we always say we believe, and it showed that it really does work and bring more opportunities to families.
That's Laura Ingram on Fox News on the Ingram angle, talking with South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem there. They go on to talk about this piece that was put out by the New York Times criticizing the pandemic response, and Governor Noem calls that a hit piece. But I want to get to this bigger, broader conversation about, this is a governor who traveled the state, traveled the nation in the fourth quarter and raised just under $1 million in the fourth quarter. 80% of that came from outside of South Dakota. $100,000 came from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. In the meantime, you know, she is drawing the ire of national media outlets. And I'm just curious as to how that plays at home, especially during a state legislative session. And I'll start with you, President Killer. Do lawmakers pay attention to where the governor is at and what their actions are? And does it matter to South Dakota voters and lawmakers? What do you think?
I mean, it does, especially when we're in session, because it's technically when we're supposed to be at work, you know. So, you know, so there's, you know, there's sometimes national meetings that you have to be a part of, but, you know, those are usually scheduled around the weekends or Fridays or something like that. You know, it's just important that, you know, we listen to our constituencies and just pay attention, because, you know, like, what might play outside of the state of South Dakota necessarily isn't going to go over well within the state of South Dakota, you know. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, whether it's like Senator Daschle, you know, Senator Thune, who held leadership positions, who've held, you know, just national stature, you know, they were also criticized, you know. So I think it comes with the territory of being from a small state. But I also think it's important that, you know, we as citizens pay attention to what's going on. And it's a good conversation, because it's like, okay, well, if these are campaign rallies, then it's fine. If they're to raise awareness for people, then I think that's where there was actually a bill introduced, and I believe it was Senator Fry Mueller. I believe she introduced a bill to kind of cover some of this conversation. So I don't remember the exact details of it, but I think that was introduced.
Yeah, it might be Taffy Howard. I'm not sure. Basically trying to find out the cost of highway patrol officers or, security details, what exactly this is travel is costing South Dakotans. And Dr. Carview, to Kevin Keller's point, George McGovern, there are plenty of South Dakota national lawmakers who get a high profile and then are accused very quickly of forgetting where they came from. Is this happening yet, or are we operating in an entirely different kind of atmosphere than we were during those days?
Well, I think there's two things going on. You asked the question, do South Dakotans care about this? And you're right, it was Representative Taffy Howard who introduced a bill, and with a couple co-sponsors, originally, basically that would require the taxpayer cost of travel to be disclosed. And Taffy Howard is definitely on the right side of Republican, right? I mean, she is not a liberal. She is not a moderate. She is a right-leaning Republican. And we're finding actually some interesting bipartisan support for this bill. Republicans, Democrats, both supporting this idea that this information, if it's taxpayer money that's being used to support this travel, it is within the rights of the people to know what that is. There, of course, are concerns about security, but finding out how much has been spent, in the past, would that have an effect on security next month or something like that? So trying to find a way to get this information to taxpayers while also maintaining security issues, it seems to be the gist of the argument that people on both sides are making right now. As far as, the question of, is this different? No, I don't think Kristi Noem is being treated differently than other politicians have been treated in the past. And in fact, part of the reason that she's getting attention is because she's drawing attention to herself. She is traveling all over the place. She's making public appearances. She is signaling to the United States that she wants to be a national figure, and so she's getting, the respective attention, I guess, the commensurate amount of attention that comes from being a public figure in the national level. So, it is interesting, though, when you look at, she wants to draw our attention. Laura Ingraham wants to draw our attention to these supposed media attacks, rather than draw attention to how is South Dakota doing under this approach that Kristi Noem is advocating? What are the actual results?
Right. And I should say that Laura Ingraham says in that interview that the pandemic is basically over in South Dakota. There, we didn't play that part, and she, I think the medical experts would argue that the pandemic is far from over in South Dakota. But she does throw some statistics up in the full interview on Fox News, where you can see how they are addressing Governor Noem's pandemic response and this New York Times piece that criticizes her pandemic response. So lots to talk about there. We're going to hit pause on that and come back and talk about it later. But Pam Caravu and Kevin Keller have been our Dakota political junkies for the day. Professor Caravu, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
President Keller, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you, Lori. Appreciate you.